coming up, got Tom Haverstraw on talking about LeBron James, Peyton Watson, some other lingering NBA free agency news. We also talked about Adam Silver's presser from earlier in the week, and we answered some of your mailbag questions. That's all coming up right now. Welcome back to the Kevin O'Connor Show. We got a good one today. Joining me to talk about the NBA offseason and answering your mailbag questions, Tom Haverstraw. Tom, how are you doing?
What's going on, Kev? How you doing?
I'm doing great today, man. Of course, the news today is LeBron is doing a live podcast at the Fanatics Fest in New York City with Tyrese Halliburton at 1:15 p.m. Eastern. And then at 3 p.m., he's joining CNBC with Rich Paul for a conversation. Do you think we get the announcement live on the Fanatics stage today? Because I don't think
so.
I don't think so.
I thought maybe he would tease today into tomorrow. So he would be, because he's on schedule tomorrow too. But after hearing who's on the panel tomorrow, it just doesn't make sense. If, Kev, let's just say, put our tinfoil hat on. If tomorrow was, hey, LeBron James and a special guest, at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, I feel like that would be more ripe for a LeBron announcement, something shrouded in secrecy, but we already know what panels he's going to be on. It doesn't really make sense for it to be announced today. I originally thought it was going to happen at Fanatics Fest, but now I don't know. It just doesn't feel like this is the time.
How about this, Tom? What if he's taking this pay cut? What if Michael Rubin's paying him $50 million to announce it at Fanatics Fest? What if that's on the table for him? 50 mil to announce it today with Tyrese Halliburton across from him. Does that make sense?
If that were the case, now I'm with you that there might be some sort of under the table greasing of the wheels here, that maybe there's a reason why he would announce it at Fanatics Fest of all places. That, you know, some of these individuals, they get paid to make these public appearances. That's how this business works. And so it wouldn't surprise me that LeBron James was being paid to appear at Fanatics Fest. But, you know, this is kind of the new world that we live in, is with this Kawhi Leonard investigation hanging over us, and how a salary cap circumvention investigation can last 11 months, and how hard it's been for Adam Silver to sit there and wait for this whole thing to take place. I think other teams maybe are looking at this and saying, like, all right, well, where is Adam Silver and the league going to land on this? Because if LeBron is willing to take a big pay cut here, there might be other ways to financially incentivize him to come to the team. Now, we just saw the Gary Trent Jr. contract. We just saw this aspiration Kawhi Leonard scandal, the investigation. We're trying to figure out, you know, in this next iteration of the NBA, where Victor Wembanyama is taking less money, Jalen Brunson is taking less money than he could, are there other ways that these guys can make revenue from their respective teams or third parties? And so, Kev, as much as we laugh about it, when LeBron James's agent, Rich Paul, puts on the whiteboard oil and Macau on the board for why maybe Dallas could be a good landing spot, the business interests of these free agents, it has to be part of the conversation.
Well, I'm sure LeBron James would also love to play with Kyrie Irving again, too. So can I add him to the whiteboard under Dallas or perhaps under another team when it comes to his decision? Because ultimately with LeBron, I mean, I don't think he's going to announce today at Fanatics Fest unless Michael Rubin, ex-Sixers minority owner who no longer has a stake in Philadelphia, did write a massive check for LeBron James, which I don't know. I'm sure he's getting paid to be there, but getting paid to announce on stage, we'll see. We'll see at 1:15 p.m. Eastern when he's sitting across from Tyrese Halliburton. Ultimately, I think he's waiting until after the World Cup for maximum attention, but also waiting until this offseason plays itself out. We had heard before, as I reported a couple Sundays ago, about the Warriors. They were in pursuit of Anthony Davis and LeBron James. It seems like the Wizards, at least thus far, are unwilling to move Anthony Davis. Other teams, we saw the Sixers trade for Jaylen Brown. They're still in pursuit for LeBron James. They think they have a real chance at him. Their front office really does feel that way. Whether they do or not, that remains to be seen until he makes his choice. But teams are trying to bolster their rosters in part to lure LeBron James. And I think Cleveland is in that pile as well. And so this leads to our first mailbag question here, Tom, from CD. CD over at Thread said, can we now say the Cavs trade for Harden was a mistake? And if they don't get LeBron, aren't they just running it back with a team that got swept? And I think this is a good question in part to tie to LeBron here because of the fact Rich Paul himself said with that whiteboard behind him on their podcast, you know, no offense to James Harden, but LeBron sure did love Darius Garland. No offense to James Harden, though. No offense at all. Very clearly to me, for LeBron James, if he's looking at this Cleveland roster, would he want to play with a backcourt with Mitchell and Harden and himself? That's not enough defense, not enough movement off ball from James Harden, not enough playmaking from Donovan Mitchell. And he can look at that front court with Jared Allen and Evan Mobley and say, is there enough spacing, enough room for us ball handlers? I don't think so. So I think this Cleveland roster, the homecoming definitely has appeal for LeBron. This team was in the Eastern Conference Finals, even though they did get swept. But this is a team that does need tweaks. They need to make moves in order to be the most appealing destination for LeBron James. And so, yes, I do think it arguably might have been a mistake to trade for Harden through the lens of pursuing LeBron James. But ultimately, in a vacuum, I understood why they did that back in February.
Do we really think that Darius Garland is the reason why LeBron James would not go to Cleveland? Because if that is the case, if Darius Garland was the variable that was going to put LeBron James in Cleveland, I'd be surprised about that, right? Like Rich Paul representing Darius Garland, it is conspicuous that he had put Darius Garland on the board, on the whiteboard, as if LeBron James doesn't already know that Darius Garland is not on the Cleveland roster. But yeah, that's, you know, his job as the agent, a representative for LeBron James, to just make sure it's clear the roster and what it looks like. I think your point about the Cavs made it to the Eastern Conference Finals, I think they got further than they were before without James Harden. So the idea that the James Harden trade was a mistake, well, we don't even know if Darius Garland would have held up in the postseason, the playoffs, to help them get to the Eastern Conference Finals. And so I think this is just playing the result here as a negative. I think whoever asked that question is pretty disappointed with the James Harden acquisition and pointing to the fact that they got swept. But I would say, glass half full, they got further than they were with Darius Garland as the point guard for the team. And yes, they did get swept by the New York Knicks. But I would say getting to the Eastern Conference Finals is a step forward in ways that, yes, James Harden was not stellar in the postseason. But I don't think it's a mistake. I don't think they regret it. And if the real reason that they don't get LeBron James is because Darius Garland isn't on the roster, I would question LeBron James' GM skills if he's looking at that roster and saying, Darius Garland is the reason why I want to go to Cleveland. I mean, he's, for all intents and purposes, a great guy, a great teammate, great point guard, but he just simply isn't a reliable guy for 100 games out of the year with his foot issues. So I just don't see how this would be a huge regret. Maybe for James Harden, they would expect a little bit more in that series against the New York Knicks. But at this stage, I don't think you can say Darius Garland would have been any better with his injury questions.
Yeah, I would agree with you there. And ultimately, if I remember correctly, back in February, Rich Paul made some comments about Garland's exit from Cleveland to the Clippers being a good opportunity for him as well. I mean, it would seem like that was something that they wanted. There was rumors, I think, last summer about Garland being iffy about his future in Cleveland as well. So very clearly, there was at least some uncertainty about having him there in Cleveland as well. So ultimately, I do think this is just about Harden and Cleveland needing to find someone better than him, at least in LeBron's eyes, for him to actually end up going there. So we'll see how that plays out. We will see. Maybe he just chooses Cleveland for the homecoming anyway. All that said, Tom, next question from Ogo. What surprise team in the East is not making the playoffs next season? And I think if we assume the Heat are in with Giannis, if we assume the Pacers are in with Tyrese Halliburton, that's two teams back in the playoffs. Just as a reminder, the East standings last year was Detroit, Boston, New York, Cleveland, Toronto, Atlanta, and then from the play-in, Philadelphia and Orlando got in, both with 45 wins last year. Which surprise team would be out with Miami back in, with Indiana possibly back in as well?
Surprise team. Okay, so that's the operative word, is surprise. What team would you be surprised that they do not make it into the East? So I feel like if we say Atlanta or Orlando, I don't think people would be stunned if those two teams that were 6 and 8 seeds would fall out of the postseason. But I do think it would be a surprise if Philly missed the postseason. I think they have the lowest floor. Look, when you talk about a team, Philadelphia, that did get Jaylen Brown this offseason, VJ Edgecombe is going to be a star in this league year two. Hopefully he gets another leap after what we saw last season. But you don't have to look too far to see high expectations for the Philadelphia 76ers completely explode. Two seasons ago, they're pegged to win 50 games in the Eastern Conference after they added Paul George, and Tyrese Maxey was already an all-star, and they ended up, 24 wins? 2 years ago, the Philadelphia 76ers went from the 7th seed to the 13th seed. They fell 26 wins below their expectation from Vegas. So they go from a 50-win team to a 24-win team. I'm just saying Joel Embiid is the biggest injury risk in the NBA. And if they don't have him and they're looking at, 60 games of Andre Drummond, backing him up, where it feels
Ariel,
like to
Huck
me.
Huck Porty now.
That was the trade.
Swap places. Huck Porty. Yes. Yep.
If you're looking at that backcourt front court, you're looking at a team that is not going to be a 50-win team. And in the Eastern Conference, if you're going to be in that bottom, low 40s with Jaylen Brown and Tyrese Maxey and VJ Edgecombe, I think you're at risk of falling out of the playoffs. Basically, what I'm trying to say is the Philadelphia 76ers, of all those teams at the top of the East, I feel like they have the lowest floor because of Joel Embiid. They're so dependent on Joel Embiid to be a really good regular season team. And even if you have Tyrese Maxey, Jaylen Brown, and VJ Edgecombe in that backcourt, I still have a lot of concerns about if they have enough in that front court, the depth there. I think the bottom could fall out quickly. And we saw it two seasons ago with Paul George, high expectations, and they had one of their worst seasons ever.
Yeah, I think that's the right answer, Tom. I think it's Philadelphia. Other than that, especially after the trades they made this offseason and the additions they've made, I think Detroit obviously would be a huge shock. I just don't see it happening. Boston would be a shock even after trading Brown. I do not see it happening. New York would be the biggest shock as the defending champions. Don't see it happening. Cleveland's, I don't see it happening. I think that team has a high floor where even if Mitchell is out, they still have James Harden. If Harden is out, they still have Mitchell. If Mobley misses time, they still have Jared Allen. They have some good wing players in that team too. It's just if they add LeBron as well, they have a very high floor. It's a good team. It's just they have some flaws that I think they need to improve if they add LeBron to optimize their chances. But I don't see them missing the playoffs. Toronto wouldn't be the biggest surprise. Still a young team. 46 wins last year. It would be disappointing, but surprise? I think surprise, that word only really applies to Philadelphia of the playoff teams last year. I think it would almost be a bigger surprise if the Pacers or Heat didn't get in. Like, that would be the bigger surprise if a team that was just in a game 7 of an NBA Finals and the Indiana Pacers didn't get back with Halliburton and Zubats after trading for him. If the Heat, after adding Giannis Antetokounmpo, weren't able to get into the playoffs, that would be the true big surprise rather than a team that was in the postseason last year actually missing it. Would you agree with that, Tom?
Yeah, Indiana certainly has a low floor. We just saw him win 19 games, right? So, like, if Tyrese doesn't come back and he still has complications coming back from his Achilles tear, and they really miss having that first round pick that they had last year that they traded for Vucevic Zubats, you could see them, not making in playoffs if Halliburton isn't 70% of what he was before. If he's like a good starter next season in his first year back from his Achilles tear and not all-star level, you could see the Indiana Pacers missing the playoffs, but they just were a 19-win team. So for me, I think if we're looking at the teams, if it's Boston, if it's New York, if it's Detroit, Miami, Philadelphia, Cleveland, Toronto, like of those teams that we're earmarking for 50-plus wins next season, I think it's Philadelphia that has the lowest floor. That would be because of the Embiid factor. So Yeah, I think if Miami falls out of the of the playoff picture with Giannis in the fold, that would be a stunner too. But for me, Indiana, I don't. It's been so long since they were. I know this sounds crazy, but it has been so long since they were at the top of the East. And Haliburton is coming back from a massive injury, and they really fell apart last year. And you pointed out midseason. Remember when you were like, "Who is the stealth most tanky team in the league?" You were like, "Oh, it's the Pacers. They're pulling the plug left and right." And so maybe there is some hidden. Hey, if they are healthy and they're optimizing for wins rather than ping pong balls, they're actually a really good team last year, kind of hidden really good team last year. I still think it's Philly. I feel like Philly has the largest variance in the East next season because they're just so dependent on health of Joel Embiid because they just don't have a lot of depth at that position.
Yeah, they don't. They need to add more there regardless of what happens with LeBron James. And we'll be right back after this break. It's a question from Michael from Flushing over on Threads. He said, there's been 8 champions in 8 years. If the next season ends up being 9-9, what would be your top 3 most likely winners? And Michael said he's got the Spurs, the Pacers, and the Timberwolves, which feels like a reasonable guess. Just to review real quick, the last 8 champions, Knicks, Thunder, Celtics, Nuggets, Warriors, Bucks, Lakers, Raptors. And so from the odds makers, that the next best odds are Spurs, Sixers, Pistons, Wolves, Cavs, Heat, Pacers, Rockets, Magic, Hawks, Blazers, Suns, Mavericks. You know, we're getting kind of running out of potential realistic options there. I think Spurs are obviously one of them, without a doubt. I think Wolves is a good other choice as well. Would you put Pacers in that, Tom? But first, you tell me, what are your three teams for this question?
Well, it's Spurs head and shoulders above yeah. everybody else, obviously. Second, I'll probably go with Minnesota. Third is interesting. I don't necessarily agree with the Pacers being there because I still got questions about Haliburton. I mean, Detroit is such an enigma, right? They should be the easy answer here. At 60-win team?
They've done nothing. They don't even have Jalen Duren re-signed. They've been unable to trade for Trey Murphy or anybody except for, I mean, they added John Collins, whoop-de-doo. They lost Isaiah Stewart. That's a wash in my eyes. They were phonies last year and so far, and they're having another phony offseason. I'm waiting for them to actually do something meaningful.
Yeah, I think it's Spurs, Minnesota. I would probably go with Detroit simply because
gross.
In the East, there are so many question marks of availability and health. Maybe I don't feel great about them. I don't. I don't feel great about any of those teams in that tier. We're talking about Houston, Cleveland, Philly, Detroit, Indiana. I don't feel great about all of those teams, but give me the one that just won 60 games and has Cade Cunningham on it if I'm going to pick among that group right there.
What's the case for the Rockets, Tom? Because let's say they get a healthy year from Steven Adams and Fred VanVleet, and they win 50-plus games last year in the Western Conference despite all their issues, despite the chemistry problems. They still win 50-plus last year. Houston, I feel like, is a little bit overlooked in some regards, especially given their paths for growth with some of their young guys as well. Maybe Şengün is 10% better, and Amen Thompson is 20% better, and Jabari Smith is 5% better, and Tari Eason remembers how to shoot threes consistently. Those things could all happen together. Yeah. And Houston maybe throws themselves into that conversation as well after being, you know, understandably overlooked this past season because they were fake. They weren't a true contender ultimately. But I think Houston, you can make a real argument for them. I think Philadelphia, if Joel Embiid, you know, you get him in bubble wrap until middle of April, he plays 25, 30 games. And then in April, he's healthy. I think Philly deserves to be in there as well. I'd put those two teams. I'd put Miami ahead of the Pistons in terms of championship upside, title upside. The Pistons do not have championship upside without roster changes. Mm-hmm. And maybe you're baking that into your choice there, that with 7 future first-round draft picks, they have all of their draft capital. They have young players of value. Ron Holland, you could flip him. You could flip Abuka Okori, their first-rounder this year. There's paths to improving, even if it doesn't happen now in July. if it happens in January or February. So I think Detroit's a reasonable choice for that reason. But without moves, I have a hard time putting them ahead of Philly or Houston or Miami, even Cleveland for that matter. Give me Cleveland over Detroit.
I totally misspoke. Look, I kind of, because in my head, the two times that they've been to the NBA Finals, Miami was not in this group, but they are in this group. That's my third team. It's Spurs, Minnesota, and Miami.
Miami.
It's they have the championship head coach. They have a champion in Giannis Antetokounmpo. I think they low key have some good shooting, or not great shooting, certainly. But they have better shooting than people are giving them credit for around Giannis and Bam. And I also think that they're already a top three defense as of now. And I expect Eric Spoelstra, with the new offense he implemented last year, and with Giannis Antetokounmpo being the downhill threat that they just did not have last year and in prior years, they just haven't had a bruiser like that on the roster. And I think Eric Spoelstra is going to have an amazing time building that offense around Giannis. Tim Hardaway Jr., top 10 three-point shooter last year in terms of volume makes in the league. He's not going to be an elite marksman, the likes of that you would expect for teams that are going to win a championship, no doubt, on a championship contender. But we've seen the Miami Heat go to the NBA Finals without top marksmen before. And so I think they've got good shooters. Andrew Wiggins. You certainly have Tim Hardaway Jr. Pelle Larsson, not a high-volume three-point shooter. Davion Mitchell, not a high-volume three-point shooter. But in terms of upside, I think the Miami Heat have championship upside in ways that Detroit doesn't quite have. So I'm going to slot them at number three there with Minnesota and San Antonio.
I'd put Philly in my third slot there, ultimately. I think, you know, Jaylen Brown, as in the live chat, Rear said, Jaylen Brown won 56 games with Kata and Garza at the five. And he's right. And so you have Jaylen Brown, Tyrese Maxey, who's improved every year of his career, Vijay Edgecombe, who should take another leap forward, adding Dean Wade at the four. I think that's an underrated move. They bring on Anthony Simons as well, draft LeBaron Filon, who looks like one of the absolute steals of the draft. This team has creation and playmaking and shooting and lineup versatility as well. And Embiid, obviously, there's massive questions with his health. That is very, very clear, the questions about Joel Embiid. But Adembona, Ariel Hekporty, as your backup fives, they're not great by any means. You need Joel Embiid. But I think for Philadelphia, there's more paths for this team to find a solid center through trade, if necessary, than there is for realistically for Detroit to add another creator than for Cleveland to completely shuffle this roster and improve their wings and improve their backcourt to appease LeBron James, and for Miami to add more reliable shooters. I'm genuinely concerned about the Heat roster, Tom. I think Giannis obviously raises your floor and he raises your ceiling in ways that very few players can. That goes without saying. I think their defense is going to be tremendous. I agree with you there. With Bam and Giannis and Davion Mitchell and Andrew Wiggins and Larsson and all these guys, like, their defense could be stellar. But offensively, obviously Giannis gives you a high floor. You're going to be an automatic top 10 offense. So like I'm talking myself into it in some ways. But the lack of shooting, I think come playoff time, could become an issue if Davion Mitchell needs to improve his three-point shooting volume, if Bam Adebayo needs to improve his three-point shooting efficiency, if Larsson needs to improve his volume. If LeBron does decide to go there, he better have one of his on years, not one of his off years like we saw last year. Tim Hardaway has one good year, then one crappy year. One good year, one streaky year. That's the way it's gone for him his entire career. Last year, he had the best season of his career statistically. What if this is the down year? He's very streaky. So I've got concerns about Miami's three-point shooting for them to ultimately hoist the trophy in the end. But ultimately, obviously, with their defense, that's great. And with Giannis, he gives you a high floor offensively. So they're going to be in there. They're in the conversation, but I wouldn't put them ahead of Philly is all I'm saying.
You have more confidence in Philly's front court than you do Miami's back court is really what you're saying.
Pretty much. Yeah. pretty much. But also, it's part of it is like just the team as a whole. I think Philly has so many guys that can carry you for stretches. To me, with Philly, it's almost a more of a question of how do these guys distribute responsibility? How much are they willing to sacrifice from a character standpoint? Can Jaylen Brown take a back seat after tasting the success of being the guy? Can Tyrese Maxey take a back seat for a month or a couple of weeks if Jaylen Brown is on an absolute heater like we saw in the first half of last season? And can VJ Edgecombe continue to play that high level role player role if he feels like he's, you know, really, really chomping at the bit of deserving more opportunities after a summer of improvements as an on ball guy? You know, like, is he going to keep defending at that level? And it, obviously, does Joel Embiid stay healthy? So a lot of questions there. I think with a lot of questions with all these teams, to your point, with that third start. The first two are the easiest when it comes to that 9-9, which seems to be precisely what Adam Silver is hoping for, considering what he said at his press conference this week in Las Vegas, talking about a lot of different topics. He talked about aspiration. He talked about the Portland's future, and he talked about the second apron. He was asked about it, and he said it's, you know, there's been no unintended consequences. This is working as intended. We have 8 champions in 8 years. There's no discussion about big market versus small market. That wasn't a combo during the NBA Finals, which is true. It really wasn't much of a topic between the Knicks and the Spurs. I didn't hear much of that at all. And so I think, to Silver's point, teams do feel like they have a chance regardless of their market size, in part because of the movement that is forced as a result of the second apron making things hard on teams to keep multiple players making $60+ million. Ultimately, Tom, I think Boston, Brad Stevens, Jared Weiss from The Athletic had asked the question about how Stevens mentioned should a player you draft count as the full max contract towards the cap if you had drafted that player? Should there be some type of tweak to the second apron for those situations? And Adam Silver said, well, to some teams, it might be a tweak. To other teams, that might be an overhaul in the way the rule was written. I tend to side with Silver in this, Tom. I think in the case of Jaylen Brown specifically, Boston's been trying to trade that guy for like 8 years. They chopped him for Kawhi Leonard. They tried trading him for Kevin Durant. They tried last summer for Giannis Antetokounmpo. They tried this February for Giannis Antetokounmpo. They tried this summer again for Giannis Antetokounmpo, and they were unwilling to. So it's like all this talk about, well, he's a homegrown star, he shouldn't count as a cap. I don't think they would have wanted to pay him $50 million, never mind $60 million. So I don't think it changes much as in the case of the Boston Celtics personally. I think that's kind of a weak argument there with Jaylen, but ultimately
Hold on. Before you move off of that. So you're saying maybe the Celtics don't value him differently, but what about other teams if he's, you know, at 50 million versus 70 million, sure. Which to just do the math here, he's eligible later this summer for a maximum extension that'll pay him about $72 million a year for 2 years.
Oh my God.
So I think that's what's hanging up all of this, is I think all the teams in the NBA are like a little nervous about that deal, not the existing deal. I think that's the one that teams were scared of, is if Jaylen Brown is going to come to my team, he's going to want that extension on the table, or a commitment for that extension as soon as I walk in the door, or he can make things very ugly. And Brad Stevens was sitting in that seat and was willing to trade him for Paul George and a couple picks because he didn't want to be footing the bill for Jaylen Brown. I think this is not reported, but I'd imagine those conversations about that extension were not going well, or the idea that they were going to put that on the table at the full max after he just won a finals MVP. I can very much understand why he and his representation would want to have a full maximum extension after what he did in the 2024 playoff run. But I do think that his value would greatly improve if his max number was not at 30% or 35%, it would be at 20% or 25%. And I think teams would look at their books a lot differently acquiring a 20% or 25% max guy in Jaylen Brown. But then again, how would that translate if you are getting a discount to sign a guy on an extension because you drafted him? Do you lose that in a trade? that little bubble, that little bump that you're getting, that subsidy that you're getting. Do you lose that if you trade a drafted guy? Because I think you do, right? If you build in a rule to say, hey, you're going to retain your player, you want to retain your superstar, hey, we'll give you a 5% discount on that against the cap. I think if you do trade that guy eventually, then I think you lose that subsidy. So maybe the teams in this proposed rule, if you acquire a guy, you lose that subsidy there. Is that the understanding, that if you did have this rule in place, if you sign a guy to that max extension and then you trade him, does he go back up to that 30%, so to speak?
I think that's the way it would be, but either way, it doesn't seem like it's going to happen just based off of Adam Silver's answer to that question. It seems like, as he said, this is something that was negotiated for months, and it's the way the rule is, and it's having the intended consequences, not the unintended consequences. So I don't see it happening anytime soon. This feels like a next CBA thing more than some revision that's going to happen anytime soon. But there are real things happening. I mean, he was asked about potential expansion. He talked about Vegas. He talked about Seattle. Adam seemed a bit more bullish about the Vegas possibility than he did the Seattle possibility. He said, you know, how it's music to his ears about, you know, all these suitors for Las Vegas. And then in regards to Seattle, he was a bit more muted, and he said something along the lines of, well, not all the bidders are known publicly. And it's like, oh, okay. So there's all this excitement, including from you, around Las Vegas, but not, there's just, oh, there's these secret bidders, secret interested parties in Seattle. It seems like, at least reading between the lines of Adam Silver, that Vegas seems like a more solid and real possibility for expansion, whereas Seattle, a bit more iffy, at least the way I read it. Did you feel the same way listening to Adam talk earlier this week?
Yeah, because I would have said the opposite. I would have thought that the market for Las Vegas, given the issues in Vegas as a tourism attraction that it used to be, and now I feel like it's harder to fill the seats if you're the NBA. It's not as fertile of a ground from a business perspective in terms of, in a legalized, nationally, the federal ban on gambling, sports gambling has been lifted. And so I feel like the destination that Las Vegas used to be, I think it was a lot better. If you're a businessman and you're looking at bringing a team to Las Vegas, I feel like it's less exciting of a market. But what Adam Silver, what he said, music to my ears, I don't think I've heard Adam Silver be that effusive and positive ever. You know, it's not usual that you hear Adam Silver say that, right? And so for him to go to that extent and describe it as music to my ears, I was like, whoa, maybe this is Bob Iger, the report that Bob Iger might be looking at a team in Vegas. That might be why he's so excited, is he's been a longtime friend of Bob Iger, partnered with him on the bubble in 2020 as the head of Disney. I can understand if he feels that Bob Iger is going to lead the group for the Las Vegas team. I would say that's why it's music to his ears. Maybe some Disney music or Disney soundtrack in his ears that it's playing if Bob Iger is the guy. But Seattle, to me, that seemed surprising that he wouldn't be as effusive about Seattle. I don't know exactly what that means, but I do think that the music to my ears comment, that was interesting. Among of the more interesting things that he came out with on Tuesday, the description of that he was over the moon about the Vegas business opportunities, that was surprising to me. Maybe it was because this was in Vegas when he was handling this press conference, but I'm surprised.
Speaking about Disney and kids movies, have you seen Toy Story 5 yet?
No, I haven't. Actually, the girls, my wife took the girls over to see it last week.
Oh, you didn't go, Tom? Dad stays home?
Look, man, they were on vacation during the free agency stuff. I had to work, man. So they went and they saw it, and so maybe I got to go back and see it again with them. But no, my wife took them last week. I'm a bad father because I didn't go watch Toy Story 5 with them.
Tom, no, I haven't seen it yet either, but I'm 35 and single, so I have a little excuse there. I do want to see it. I've heard from my friends. I was at a wedding this weekend, a beautiful wedding in Laguna Beach. Congrats to the bride and groom for getting married this weekend. And I saw some friends there, and they're big movie people. and they have seen Toy Story 5, and they said it's back. It's back to the level of the first three movies after 4 was a bit of a step back. So I haven't seen it yet. I'm very excited for it. I am seeing I'm seeing The Odyssey first. That's my priority. I'm seeing The Odyssey this weekend, and hopefully LeBron doesn't make his announcement during the 3 hours. I'm in the theater with my phone turned off on silent mode. I don't think LeBron's going to announce this weekend. I think it's going to be post-World Cup as he's waiting for somebody to trade for Anthony Davis, for somebody to trade for Kyrie Irving, waiting for something like that to happen. That's what I think is the true wait here, not for maximum attention after the World Cup. I think it's waiting for this offseason to play itself out with teams in pursuit of players that he wants to unite with his new destination, regardless of where it is. But I am very excited to see Toy Story 5. Whenever that time comes very soon, I'll probably cry at the end of it, like I do with all those sentimental movies. Adam Silver also talked about Portland, Tom. He had a very interesting response about the Blazers with their current negotiations for an arena in Portland. He said, "I was hoping for more progress would have been made by now on that agreement, and it seems to have gone off track in various ways. We're working with both sides to ensure that the Trailblazers can have a long-term future in Portland. However, there are several open issues that still need to be resolved." Pretty open and candid answer from Adam Silver here, Tom. Obviously, you work with the Trailblazers. I'm not sure how much you can say here, but I'm just curious about your general thoughts on the situation. If you can give kind of like an explainer for listeners about what the whole deal is here with Portland and Tom Dundon, their new owner.
Well, I'll just say this. I really feel for the Portland fans, especially in the Pacific Northwest, that they watched the Seattle Supersonics leave town to go to Oklahoma City. And yes, it's not completely apples to apples, but I just feel for Blazers fans right now, because a lot of those Blazers fans may have been Seattle fans that converted to Blazers fans and are feeling a lot of PTSD with the way that the rhetoric is going. And I think for everybody involved, the Blazers, the league, the city, everybody needs to come together and get this deal done. I feel for the Blazers fans that it just, I will say the past 3 years, being at the arena, being on air with the Blazers, if they're not the best fans in the NBA, they're on the short list of the most passionate, rabid fans in the NBA. And a lot of it has to do with that they are, in terms of the four major sports, they are a one team town. And so there's so many fans that and families, as family oriented as they come in the NBA, it would be a real loss. Like genuine loss, not unlike the Seattle Supersonics leaving a great sports town and a great great city in Seattle. So I hope, I just hope it doesn't come to that. But yeah, this is painful for everybody involved. You can hear Adam Silver, the strain when he talks about this and the expectation with the new ownership that this would go a lot smoother with the city. And certainly the league, Adam Silver has a lot of work to do.
Yeah, absolutely does. And hopefully that Portland Trailblazers just stay in Portland. It's a great basketball town, as you said, and I'm rooting for it to stay there. And otherwise, if we do get Seattle and if we do get Las Vegas, I don't even know where Portland would go. It's hard to say. I hope they stay in Portland. We keep basketball in the Pacific Northwest with Seattle and with Portland, which would be a cool little rivalry to form once again up there. We'll be right back. Adam also talked about aspiration. He said, "We all have an interest in wrapping this up, and I am hopeful it will conclude this summer." And he reiterated, "I am not conducting the investigation, nor is the league office. There's an independent law firm, the independent of the league." He's like, "In theory, as the commissioner, I could tell them to end it, but their reputation is on the line, and I'm letting them conduct this investigation individually." So he's kind of sidestepping responsibility here, and also said, "We're not the one who paused the Raptors-Clippers trade. They decided to pause it, given the possibilities of what the penalty could be." So I thought it was a fascinating choice by Silver to kind of just dodge responsibility here and put it all on the independent law firm. Very odd move, Tom. Very odd.
He's the boss. He's paying... Wachtell Lipton, like he's the commissioner of the NBA. This is his job. A strong leader would say, hey, here's the deadline. Give me your report. And then I will adjudicate this matter and levy the punishment. And that's it. It's clear he did not give a deadline, and it's clear he hasn't made a deadline. He said he's hopeful. He didn't say we will get a decision by opening night on October 15th or whatever it is. He said he's hopeful that he gets it in. I mean, in any business, in any workplace, there are deadlines for a reason, is that you can move on. And it's not just the Clippers that can move on or the Toronto Raptors that can move on. It's the entire NBA is hinging on this deal, because we had this problem. We've talked about this in October, was what happens if the Clippers, Lawrence Frank, decides to trade multiple first round picks to go get Zion Williamson? What happens then? And the fact that that didn't happen, that the Clippers did not trade for a superstar or a star player in the middle of the season last year, the NBA sidestepped a huge landmine when it came to this investigation. This should have been wrapped up months ago. I will remind viewers that the Joe Smith scandal, in which there was the analogous situation here, and a cap circumvention scandal in the NBA that David Stern ruled on, that took 2 months. It's not apples to apples, because there was a hard agreement with the organization, Minnesota Timberwolves, to circumvent the rules and on a getting bird rights and then exploding his contract, getting a massive deal. But that investigation took a matter of 2 months to conclude and levy a punishment, which oftentimes is being characterized as a comp for this one, is that multiple first round picks, they ripped up his contract with the Minnesota Timberwolves, but that didn't take a whole year to get to the bottom of and to levy a punishment. It took 2 months, Kev. So yes, this is a little bit messier, and you're dealing with an aspiration, a federally investigated situation where someone's going to jail for 14 years. There is a lot of stuff that Adam Silver wishes he had the power to do, but certainly one of those powers he can do is set a deadline. And he clearly has been unwilling to do that. And it raises questions. Why?
Yeah, I agree completely with every word you said, Tom. Very odd how there's no deadline. Ultimately, his response, it's possible he is doing, as he said, just dodging responsibility here. It is possible he's just trying not to show any cards at all and just completely washing his hands of it for now. And when in reality, he does have more information and does know exactly what way this could go and does know when things could end up resulting. And he just doesn't want to show any hand at all here. I don't think that to be the case. Seems like consistently it's been this type of response from him about this is an independent investigation. And when the report comes, the report comes. Which is a bit strange to me. So we'll see how that ends up concluding.
It's a commissioned. Yeah, it's a commissioned exactly. investigation. Exactly. He's paying it. Exactly. And as Pablo Torre on the Pablo Torre Finds Out show has pointed out, is that the team that is being investigated foots the bill. So if you really want to be technical about this, is that the Steve Ballmer Clippers are footing the bill for this investigation. And so it is not independent. It is commissioned. The NBA is paying for it. And it just raises all sorts of conflicts of interest that the NBA has not wrapped this up in time for the deals to get done. The fact that the Toronto, it should be such a cool story that the Toronto Raptors are bringing Kawhi back for another run at the championship after 2019. But instead, we're in this limbo. And meanwhile, there's other, you know, unsavory federal investigations going on with the sports betting that Adam Silver led on. Like, if you want to talk about leadership, Adam Silver went way above what expectations were in leading the movement to legalize or lifting the ban on sports gambling in America. And of all the things that Adam Silver has been out in front and been very bold in, it's that, right? And I wish he had the same similar leadership on this Kawhi Leonard investigation, because we would have been done with this and we wouldn't have all these questions hanging over the league. And I think that's part of the job, is to make hard decisions and have uncomfortable conversations with your law firm and said, hey, July, let's call it June 30th. That's the deadline so that I can adjudicate this matter in time for the transaction cycle.
Next question from Will on Threads. He said, how many teams in the West are you confident will finish with a better record than the Jazz? And Will cited the OKC Thunder, Spurs, Wolves, maybe Nuggets. And is that it? I'd go a little further than that. I would say definitely, if healthy, six teams: Thunder, Spurs, Nuggets, Lakers, and Wolves. I'd go with those teams, and plus the Rockets, if healthy being the qualifier there. I'd say the Jazz should definitely finish above the Kings, above the Pelicans, probably ahead of the Clippers. We'll see how their offseason shakes out, if they flip their first rounders to do anything else, but I'd say above those teams. And I'd say Utah is in the same lump with Portland, Phoenix, Golden State, Dallas, and Memphis would be kind of my expectation that they're in that group.
Yep, I'm with you. I got OKC, San Antonio on another tier. Am I doing title tiers right now? I've got OKC and San Antonio in a tier of their own in the West. Then I'll go Minnesota and Denver in the second tier. And of course, all of this is pending LeBron and what have you, and the rest of the deals that haven't gone through yet. Then in that third tier, I think I've got Lakers and Houston. And then in that fourth tier of like high, like it's really hard to pin down the upside of these teams. Portland with Ja Morant joining an ascendant team. You've got Golden State with Stephen Curry. It's hard to bet against Stephen Curry if he's healthy for 80 games. That team is a contender. And then it's a bunch of like Utah, I would say, I can only put six teams confidently. The word is confident there. The operative word that I'm circling is confident. I feel confident that Houston, Lakers, Denver, Minnesota, San Antonio, and OKC, six teams above Utah. But I am not confident about this defense. Walker Kessler was their best chance at being an average defense next year, and they traded him for picks. And then you got Jaren Jackson Jr. at the five, Larry Markkanen at the four, and then a lot of just scoring and not defensive first guys. So this team was ranked 29th last season in defensive rating, 30th and 30th in the previous two seasons. So last 3 years, they've been the worst team we've ever seen in NBA history defensively. And I don't see that drastically improving next season. And I think, you know, this Utah Jazz team with Lowry Markkanen in uniform the last 2 years, they're 26-63. So even if you want to say Markkanen being back and healthy, it would make me say, okay, well, they had one good year with Lowry Markkanen. They pulled the plug at the tail end of the season, and they were a 37 win team with Lowry Markkanen when he started the All-Star game in Utah. But there isn't much evidence of them being a good defensive outfit. And you, to me, in order to make that leap into the tier with the Lakers and with Houston, how do they get to be a 50-win team? Well, they have to tread water defensively. And I just, that roster, man, Will Hardy's got a lot of work to do on that defensive end.
Yep, exactly. Especially after losing Walker Kessler, to your point, Tom. Like, Jaren Jackson Jr. is going to help a lot. You know, re-signing Nurkic, still a solid center, but still some lingering questions with that Utah roster. And they're still young overall. Ace Bailey still needs to grow. Darren Peterson, let's see how it translates. Keontae George is still on the upward trajectory, but this team still has a lot to prove, which is why I put them in that big lump of teams in the middle of the Western Conference. There was some news, Tom, while you were answering that question. Sham Sharania reported that the NBA is probing the signed $64 million free agent deal for Cary Trent Jr. with the Milwaukee Bucks, per a league spokesman. There was controversy as soon as that deal was signed in Milwaukee, given he's coming off of one of the worst seasons of his entire career. He declined a $3.9 million player option for next season, became an unrestricted free agent, and then signed for 4 years, $64 million. And you go back to 2024, he originally signed with Milwaukee to a one-year, $2.6 million veteran minimum deal with Milwaukee. Then he signed a two-year deal at $7.5 million in 2025. And then this summer signs the 4 years, $64 million deal after one of the worst seasons of his entire career. It is suspicious, for sure, that there was some type of wink-wink agreement back in 2024 or in 2025 when he signed his two prior contracts to then sign for this money. I think there could be something there, Tom, without a doubt. but a couple of thoughts on it. A, for Milwaukee, you might want to give him this money because you want a very tradable contract. You might want to have a deal in that financial range, 4 for $64, because he can be traded for players making more money. He can be traded for a couple of players making less money. It's a very tradable deal. And B, I don't have personally much of a big issue with these type of wink, wink agreements. The salary cap has so many little weird rules and things you have to navigate. There's the first apron and the second apron, and there's this and that. There's bird rights and yada, 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 yada. Teams have to navigate a lot. And if there's some type of wink, wink agreement, I have less of an issue with it, as long as it's within the constraints of the rules. And aside from the wink, wink saying, we'll pay you more later to pay you less now, I don't have as much of an issue with that personally. I don't. So I don't care too much about this, but it definitely does smell. There's something suspicious here, given the way the rule is written. And it won't surprise me if the NBA does discover something.
In 2 years, right?
Yeah, I know. Yeah, in 2 years. In 2 years, we'll find out.
I mean, seriously, like, Wachtell's got their cap circumvention. They're very busy. The whole team is dealing with the Kawhi Leonard thing. And then they're like, oh, by the way, we got another one here to investigate for you. Now, this one, let's put all the cards on the table here. It's not just Gary Trent Jr. that's involved in this. It's Rich Paul. The biggest agent in the sport is the representative for Gary Trent Jr. And so there's that power dynamic, is that there is going to be an investigation into the dealings of LeBron James's agency in Clutch Sports and the agreement with Gary Trent Jr. So there's a lot of power intrigue here, palace intrigue here, when it comes to this story because of the names involved. And I would also say that, like, when I mentioned the Joe Smith deal earlier, that was a similar story, is that they agreed on paper that Glenn Taylor had an agreement with Joe Smith's agent, Andrew Miller. There was an agent dispute between Andrew Miller and Eric Fleischer. And as part of that dispute, there was a legal dispute. It went to discovery. There was a documentation agreement that Joe Smith would take 3 1-year deals at the minimum, and then to get to his bird rights, and then go above the cap to go get I think it was upwards of $86 million contract. This one's $64 million over 4 years, took minimum deals before them with the same club. So it does seem to be apples and apples in that respect. And that was a high-powered – the agents involved in that Joe Smith controversy was certainly analogous to this in Rich Paul. I think – look, I don't think everyone is upset that Gary Trent Jr. got – a 4-year, $64 million. In the end, how is that really going to move the needle in the NBA if he plays for the Bucks for the next 4 years? I think what everyone is clamoring for is rules. I think everyone's just looking for guidance on, do these rules actually matter? Does the Kawhi Leonard cap circumvention scandal, if the result of that is, oh yeah, you can go get a third party to sign a superstar to a no-show endorsement contract, $40 million, no problem. That's fine. I think everyone just needs to know what time it is. Like, what are the rules in place? And then we'll go and do this business. If there are no rules on the cap circumvention stuff, then I think a year from now, if, let's say, I'm just... like the Jalen Brunson contract, right? If the Jalen Brunson contract, with the knowledge of what we know, that Kawhi Leonard is now being investigated for cap circumvention, and we know that Gary Trent Jr. is being invested for cap circumvention, the next Jalen Brunson contract that happens, everyone's gonna be like, oh, what kind of side deal does he have under the table? That's not an NBA that I think people want to live in, right? Is that every contract that's handed out, we're suspicious that there's a side deal going on. And there's enough of that cynicism in the NBA and people who are just like, I don't know if this is on the up and up. We've got all these scandals going on. I just think that the NBA needs to come down hard on these things, because I think the NBA needs to have the appearance of rules and consequences if you break those rules. And that's why I think the Gary Trent Jr., while it isn't a big name, there are people involved that are very powerful people. And I would say the fans deserve to know if the rules are being held account, players and agencies and teams are being held accountable to the rules. Otherwise, it's the Wild Wild West, and we do not want that in the NBA.
For sure. And ultimately, I wonder if that's what's if that's also a factor behind this whole LeBron decision as well. If this whole whiteboard and it's going to take weeks, if this is all actually he knew, because there's tampering prior to when tampering was allowed. If that's the case, the clutch and LeBron are just trying to avoid all of that with this big cover with everything else. You know what I mean?
I know what you're saying.
If the decision's actually been made a month ago, you know what I mean? And this is all. This is all just for theater and content.
Cover up that that it was already agreed to, or like, yes. The idea would be have this dance, have voice notes being sent, have Bob Myers on the podcast, have Tim Connelly at the press conference for LaMelo basically make his pitch for LeBron to sign there. All of this is so that they have plausible deniability that this wasn't already agreed to a month ago with the Cleveland Cavaliers or whomever it would be.
Yes, exactly. It could exactly be that. So I think let's before we end here, Tom, a couple of comments from the live YouTube chat. Thank you guys for watching us live on YouTube. Give us a like and subscribe to Yahoo NBA if you're not done so already. DJ May said, any word on Peyton Watson? I personally haven't heard much here. I know Mark Stein over at the Stein Line wrote how the Bucks are one of the teams alongside the Clippers and the Hawks that have interest for a sign and trade in Peyton Watson. I had heard a couple weeks ago about the Clippers as a team that did have interest, but as Stein said, the Hawks and Bucks are in that too. And I think the Clippers aspect hits on our point here, Tom, with Kawhi. This whole aspiration thing holds up a Peyton Watson type of guy, because if there's no decision there, the Clippers don't know exactly how many first round picks they have to flip or trade to go get a guy like Peyton Watson, because that's what the Nuggets would want in return. They want a Walker Kessler type of return in order to facilitate a sign and trade to another team. And so I think like aspiration is holding everything up. LeBron is holding everything up. There's a lot of things we're still waiting for right now. But boy, like if Denver does indeed lose Peyton Watson, Tom, what a loss for them, man. Like, that's a big, big-time loss as a high-level wing defender and a guy who's blossomed on the offensive end of the floor as well. Aaron Gordon's injury issues in recent years, I'd be a bit concerned for Denver's finals upside if they lose Peyton Watson.
Yeah, I think Jamal Murray trading him is the only way out of this mess if they lose Peyton Watson. And I don't know, at the contract that he's at, how much different it would be to Jaylen Brown. Jamal Murray is a great player, made the All-Star team for the first time in his career last year, but he's been in the postseason an All-Star player. It just in regular season hasn't been healthy or in shape enough to be there. But at the contract that he's at, Denver's not in an enviable position. Of all teams to have one of the best players of all time, and Nikola Jokic in his prime, they're pretty stuck right now if Peyton Watson leaves. They just don't have not just a full roster to complement Nikola Jokic, but also tradable pieces. And so I think they're backed into a corner with assets and maybe moving off of Jamal Murray after the very disappointing postseason that they had. And again, Peyton Watson wasn't there in that Minnesota Timberwolves series. So it just feels like to me, Denver, there's been no indication that Jokic wants out, right? But you can see that if Kawhi Leonard investigation is still held up, and that we have Gary Trent Jr. being held up, and the dominoes of all of those things holding up the league, just wait until a star player decides, I want out. And we don't have any sort of clarity on those two investigations and how much that could hold up the league. And so that's why I think the NBA really wants this aspiration scandal, the investigation to be done, because it's fine right now. but like Kawhi Leonard's been held up, and the next superstar that wants out, this gets really, really messy that teams don't know what time it is.
Yeah. Got to get some clarity, Tom. Got to get clarity on what's going to happen here. Maybe we'll get it this weekend. Maybe LeBron at 1:15 p.m. Eastern on stage with Tyrese Halliburton at Fanatics Fest will announce where he's going. I don't think so. I doubt that happens. We'll be back on my show again next Monday. If you want to submit a mailbag question, hit me up on email at kocshow@yahoosports.com or comment on the YouTube, comment on Spotify, or just hit me up anywhere on social at Kevin O'Connor. Tom, you got your show next week, The Big Number, you and Dan Devine next Wednesday as well. And you and I believe we'll be back again a week from today on Thursday, live here again on Yahoo NBA. Who knows? Maybe with a decision from LeBron, maybe not. Maybe this is going to linger deep into July or even into August. Who knows what's going to happen? But all I know for a fact is that we're waiting on clarity. LeBron too, not with aspiration, but with AD, Kyrie, guys like that, that he'd like to play with again next season. So we'll see what happens there, Tom. Hope you have a good weekend. Go watch Toy Story 5. Go for a morning matinee showing before the kids are getting going. Go see Toy Story 5, and I'm going to see The Odyssey. Have a good one, bud. Have a good weekend, Tom.
You got it, man. You too.